The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
You're listening to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, and I'm Vivian Glass. In our Talking Heads feature, we're chatting to the head teachers of our local schools. And joining me this evening, we have Andy Ford, the headmaster of St George's Secondary School in Harpenden. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Good evening. Hello.
Hi, Andy. We're so delighted to have you on the show today. I've mentioned St George's is a secondary school in Harpenden. Can you just tell us briefly a little bit more about the school?
Absolutely. It's great to be here this evening. So, yes, St George's is a non-denominational Christian school in Harpenden. Secondary, as you said. So we have students with us from year 7 to year 13. So that's aged 11 to 18. We're a mixture of different things. We're a comprehensive local community school for students from across Harpenden, but further abroad as well in terms of our sixth form provision, where students travel in from quite long distances around to come to be with us in the sixth form. But we're also one of a very small number of state boarding schools as well. And that is, there are about 30 of them in the UK, so-called Britain's greatest kept educational secret. And we like to think it's an important part of St George's. We have students from around the world coming to join us in Harpenden, but also students boarding with us who live more locally or across the UK as well. And so this is their home away from home throughout the academic year. And that interesting mix of students leaves St George's and makes St George's a unique place to live and to learn in the country, I would say. As I said at the beginning, we're also a non-denominational Christian school. So we do have elements of our admissions code which favour those families that are of a Christian background and heritage. And I'm happy to talk through those kind of elements. But that gives the school a really strong ethos, and our Christian heritage and our background makes it a very particular type of place as well, and a very different school.
So quite a unique school on two fronts there, Andy, because first of all, the boarding element, that's really, as you've said, really unusual, very interesting. And then obviously this element of favouring applications from Christian families. So can you just tell us a little bit about how that works in terms of an application?
Yeah, so if you're applying to the day school and as part of the move up from juniors and primary schools up into senior schools, we sit alongside all the other schools in Harpenden and in the region. But in our admissions code, and you can find all of this on our website if you're interested in looking at it in more detail, we prioritise families from a Christian background. And to show that, we ask that families show that they are attending church over a period of 2 years, at least once a month. And that's then signed off by their priest or minister or pastor, and then and that filters into our admissions process. And what that means is that all of the children, or most of the children who attend our school from years 7 to 11, certainly share that common history and understanding of our place in the world. It means that we're coming at matters of faith in a similar way. But also, I think actually it really connects us to our local community, because actually our students, if you like, have two forms of connection within the town. They are connected to us, obviously, as a school, but they're also connected to their place of worship as well. And we seek to sort of foster the links that we have with those churches as well, so that we continue together to nurture and develop young people as they go through what is the tricky time of adolescence as well. So, yeah, it makes it much more of a community effort to raise these young people rather than something which is just being done by one part of the town. So it's a real advantage in that sense, I think, as well, to us as a whole community.
And in terms of the boarding element, how big a proportion of students board?
Great question. So there are 110 boarders roughly within the school of 1,365 students in total at the moment. So that gives you a kind of an idea that it's coming up on 10% of the school population. It varies year to year. So the year 7s, we have a smaller cohort. We grow the boarding elements by year 9 and into year 10. And then again, we have more boarders join us in sixth form as well, just to be with us for those 2 years as well. As I say, the boarders live on site. So they have boarding parents within the school, and they look after their pastoral needs in the evening. They do lots of activities with them. They help them with prep. They make sure that they're set up for their academic day. But we also fully integrate our boarders into the life of our day school as well. So when they leave the boarding school in the morning, they come into the day school. They are fully a part of that. They have a tutor. They're part of the tutor bases that we have for our pastoral provision. And then they take part in lessons as normal. And then at the end of the day, instead of leaving site and going home, they come back to the boarding house where they have tea with their fellow boarders and the boarding staff and sixth form. And then they move into their activities in the evening. So they've got their kind of home away from home here on site.
Does it affect the day students? Does that change the length of the day that they perhaps have or some of the activities that are available to them?
It doesn't change the length of the school day formally. So I think we're quite a comparable school to all the local schools in terms of the amount of time the school day lasts from 8:30 in the morning to about 3:20 in the afternoon. But I think the difference it does make is in the range of activities that we have going on in school, and particularly two elements on the weekends. So we do a lot of sport on Saturdays compared to lots of other state schools. We're very proud of that provision. We have a number of different sports represented, but we've deliberately chosen over the last years to choose to focus on traditional sports of rugby and lacrosse, which are probably more commonly played in the independent sector. But we feel that their values and the things that they bring out in young people really work well alongside our values. And then the second thing, which is, I suppose, famous about St. George's, is that we also ask all of our day students to come to a chapel service three times in a term. And they come either on a Sunday morning or a Sunday evening, depending on when the chapel service is scheduled. And that's another opportunity for us to all be together. And that came about because Cecil Grant, our founding headmaster, he thought that was a really important aspect of boarding life, that everybody came together. Now, the school was much smaller then, so everybody went to chapel every Sunday. Obviously, we've made adaptations for the size of school we are, but we still feel that's a really valuable moment where we bring our students together in a different setting and come together as a community as well.
And in terms of those extracurricular activities that you mentioned there, you mentioned obviously lacrosse, you mentioned rugby. How broad an offer is there for perhaps boys and girls that aren't necessarily going to fulfil that sport, that ambition, that maybe have interests in other aspects of sport or in other activities?
Absolutely. I would say it's interesting. Because St. George's is often been known for its sport. We've had individuals be phenomenally successful. Need I say it, that the current Lions and England captain, Maro Itoje, learnt his rugby here at St. George's as a boarder. But actually, I think the great thing about St. George's is the broad range of different things that students get to do, so that you can find somewhere where you can flourish within our programme. So it really is very extensive. There's a huge amount of music going on here with things like jazz band and orchestras, string quartets, choir, chamber choir. There's a fantastic boys choir as well that goes on during the course of the week. Debating is really big here. It's with our juniors, our inters and our seniors all debating against other schools in Harpenden and across the county. The drama is really magnificent. We're just coming up to a lower school production at the moment. We have inter-house drama, and I haven't talked about all the house competitions there are as well within that. Sport, as I've just mentioned, is not just those two sports. There's obviously other sports like basketball, athletics, cross country, cricket has been growing particularly as well for girls in the last years as well. And then we have lots of subject-based clubs. So things like creative writing, maths clubs. We have clubs that are about issues that students want to get into. So we have an anti-racism group. We have a group that's an LGBTQ+ alliance group. We even have an atheist club that meets with our chaplain to try to convert him every week to being an atheist, and then he tries to convert them in the next week. So that's a really fantastic group of students who are debating and discussing philosophy. And then we have lots of clubs for those who don't quite know where they want to fit. So we have a fantastic group. There's a nature club, for example, and a gardening club. And there's also friendship clubs as well, particularly for those New Year's Sevens when they start in September, to give them an opportunity to just get to know people and find their place within the school, because We have lots of students who come from lots of different schools into St George's. So we try and find a place for them. So I hope that gives a flavour of all of the activities there are going on here before, during and after school. There's a huge amount that goes on.
And that's, you know, fantastic to hear all about those different opportunities that exist. Are you looking for all-rounders? Are you looking for academic students? Is there a particular type of student that you think is a great fit for St George's?
That's a really great question. I don't think we are particularly looking for any type of student. What I think we are looking for is for people who will adopt and live the values that St George's seeks to have. And our motto is to aim higher. The Latin for that is Labarbi Oculos, I lift up my eyes to the hills. So being aspirational, but also at the same time, looking around them all the time for other people. We talk a lot here about being obviously kind and obviously positive as behaviours that we're trying to inculcate in our students to help them to aim higher. So a great deal of time is spent developing that culture. So no, we're not looking for academics or sporty people or those who are really into their creative arts. What we're looking for is people who are seeking to contribute. And ideally, if they would be also seeking to live out our vision for service beyond self. But I recognize that's a lot in a young person. But thankfully, St George's is a very kind and welcoming place. We hopefully find somewhere for everyone to thrive in our school.
It sounds like there's a lot of consideration being given to inclusion. And how does that translate into children perhaps that need extra provision, that need some extra preparation, for instance, before they leave school for their careers?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think like many schools, St George's has had to learn and adapt to modern understandings about what it means to be an adolescent and thinking very carefully about how we make everybody feel welcome in this place. So I don't think it's something that schools do necessarily just through their provision. I think you can look at the list of things I've just gone through in terms of our co-curricular program. You can say that's a symptom of inclusion, but actually that's not really what inclusion is. I think that is actually what it really comes down to is the culture that we're trying to nurture here. And actually for us, that comes down to our Christian heritage that we give value to the individual regardless of what they do and who they are. We talk a lot about everyone being made in the image of God and that everyone has a special value within God's creation. So therefore, we value a wide range of contributions to our community and try to find opportunities to celebrate achievements. And that could be within the tutor base, with individual small groups, that could be in the house system and celebrating them through assemblies. It could be in really big ways, like our prize giving at the end of the academic year or through the awarding of a head teacher's commendation that goes on through the course of the year. But we try very hard to make sure that we reward and foster inclusion in that sense as well. No, I was just going to say as well, the other thing is obviously, I mentioned them very briefly, but I think one really good example is our inter-house events that take place. So they're over the course of the year, there are about 23 inter-house events that take place. Some of them are open to all. So for example, if you want to do the art or the photography competition, or you want to be part of the bake-off, baking something, then that's open to everyone. But sometimes they are more competitive in, let's say, for example, sport or in drama or in music. There might be smaller groups of students who are involved in those things as well. And the tutors sit there alongside the heads of house, trying to actively encourage and involve their tutees in something. And we track all of that through something called SOX, which is a registration process, so that we know we have really good engagement and we spot when students aren't finding anything to do and have conversations. It might be that they are so busy outside of school with all the things that they didn't need to do that within school. They're filling up already and actually they come to school for a rest because we have lots of students who do amazing things outside of school too. But hopefully they've got somewhere that they're finding to flourish in school as well.
And in terms of resources, how well resourced do you think you are for children with perhaps special educational needs?
Yes, absolutely. So we, like many schools, have a really fantastic SEN department led by a fantastic Senko. But we also have a large team who specialise in what's termed SEMH, that's social, emotional, and mental health concerns as well. So the SEND team worked to identify the needs of children very early. We're really proactive when our children arrive in year seven. We've not only worked very closely with colleagues in primary schools to identify concerns, but we also screen students on arrival. And we also encourage and train our staff to teach really well, but spot when problems are occurring in homework or classwork so that they notice if things aren't working out as they should be. Because one thing is certainly true with special educational needs is that students do everything they can to mask their need, and they work really hard. And sometimes that can actually be debilitating in terms of how exhausting that can be during the course of the school day. Because everybody's just trying to do their best. They're trying to get by and try to make sure that they're flourishing. And sometimes you can make up for special educational needs through hard work and effort, but actually they do need something else in addition. So that team works alongside. So we have lots of learning support assistants who go into lessons and work one-to-one with people or assist in whole classes. And then alongside that, the team in student services are there to pick up those people who perhaps have a more crisis moment, need a bit of time out of lessons, or indeed just need meeting with because something's happened in their lives. So that could just happen at a different time of the day in a very subtle way. And that those are the works of our house pastoral assistants who work alongside tutors and heads of house to do that as well. And then alongside that, we've got all of the things that all lots of schools do too. So we bring in lots of provisions from outside, like speech and language therapists and people who work with different charities and that sort of stuff as well to really help support students.
Andy, you touched there on mental health, and something that we're, I think, fairly consistently hearing about in the media at the moment is the concerns around mobile phones, smartphones, technology, whether that be from dopamine addiction through to actual real harm from accessing inappropriate material and content. What's your position on that conversation around smartphones and around technology?
I think you're right to identify that things are changing at the moment in terms of the zeitgeist and how people feel. I think how parents in our primaries now feel is very different to how it was a few years ago in regards to mobile phones and particularly, I think, discerning the difference between just a mobile phone, but a smartphone in particular. St George's has always had a no phones during the school day policy. And actually, as a new member of staff arriving this year, I witnessed that is extremely well adhered to by both students in terms of them behaving and following the rules, but also in terms of staff enforcing it as well. So there's a really clear consequence ladder here, which it would include parental involvement if a student kept on using a mobile phone in school. So we have very few behavioural issues concerning mobile phones, and they're not really a distraction from learning here. However, we do recognise that that's not everything to do with a smartphone. And we try to foster an environment where we encourage reflection from pupils on their use of phones. We do that in things like PSHE and in tutor time as well. We also have a policy that no trips have mobile phones on them at all. So if a big trip goes out, for example, we just had a geography trip up to the lakes, they weren't allowed to take their mobile phones with them for that. And we help them, we encourage the students to reflect on their digital habits through having some time without a phone. And that will be kind of part of that process. But I think like lots of schools, we are listening and thinking at the moment about, you know, what the future looks like for smartphones and children. And I think it's going to be a matter of partnership with our families. And I think, you know, heads would also like the government to take a lead as well in setting out expectations for families. They do in other areas of life, like smoking and vaping and wearing seatbelts and food consumption. And actually, this is an area that's been really lightly regulated thus far. And it'd be fantastic to know with a bit more clarity. Now the evidence is becoming clearer what the government would like to do about that as well.
One thing that, you know, this sort of touches on as well, I suppose, is discipline. I think that's one of the flashpoints, isn't it, is tech use, certainly at home. In terms of at school, how do you make it work in terms of discipline for today's children?
So I think St George's is a traditional school. We have high expectations of pupils and their behaviour. And almost all of the time, our pupils live up to that expectations. I'm a big believer you set the bar really high and pupils will naturally rise to that. So we have really high standards around uniform, for example. I think some of our students would be, I think I'm obsessed with top buttons and shirts being tucked in and those kind of things. But I think they're really important because I think by dealing with the little things, the big things then don't tend to go wrong. It's not always the case, of course, but I think it shows children that you really care about them if you're interested in how they appear and how they are behaving towards each other in corridors and how they're behaving as they're in the dining hall and helping them to present their best self to the world. I think if you can manage it at that level, often the bigger things don't happen. But whilst we're very traditional, I think we're also a very relational school. And I've mentioned it, the house system, which is essentially our four schools within a school and our tutors that are running that system and with vertical tutor groups where there are loads of opportunities for modeling and mentoring between different year groups, means that we have lots of opportunities to kind of to coach students before they make the mistakes, or if they do make the mistake, making sure that they're learning from that really effectively. And when things do go wrong, as they inevitably will, because these are teenagers that we're teaching and learning with, and they're going to make mistakes, and that's all part of growing up, we make clear to them that behavior is not acceptable, and that might involve using a sanction to make that point. But more importantly than the sanction, we're also seeking to understand that behavior and think about what that behavior was trying to communicate to us, so we can then put things in place that allow them to move forwards and change that behavior. Because behavior is only the, if you like, the method of communication they've chosen to use on this occasion. They weren't able to talk about it. They weren't able to self-regulate. So they acted out in some way, shape, or form. And we do try to use as many sort of restorative approaches as possible, where students talk through what they've done wrong and understand the impact of how their behavior has affected other people in our community. Because ultimately, our job as a school is to get them ready to go out into the world where few of those structures will exist. And so we need them to be ready for the road. And that is going to be a road where they're expected to look after themselves and change their behaviours for themselves.
You mentioned there as well that you have been, was it 1 year, not quite 1 year into the job. How are you finding this new role, Andy? How's it working out with your expectations, I suppose, of what the school would be and what it is?
I think the only people who can answer that question are our pupils, our parents and our staff, if I'm honest. But I am personally absolutely loving being part of the St. George's community. It's a school that I fell in love with during the appointment process. And I have not regretted it at all, moving to Harpenden and becoming part of this very special community. In terms of my expectations, I knew that it was going to be a place where the chapel was at the heart of it, and that was important to me personally. I knew that it'd be a place where students and parents had very high expectations of the school, and I've enjoyed getting to understand that. And as for my expectations overall, it's definitely more than met them. And I just hope that I'm living up to everybody's expectations of me.
Is there a North Star for where you would like to take the school? Have you got any sort of vision in mind that's perhaps taking it into a different progression or in any way changing the nature of the school at the moment?
Well, in terms of a North Star, I think that's a really interesting question. I mean, one group of people we've not mentioned on the call today are our wonderful governors, who, if you like, I suppose, hold the school's values and vision for us. So as a head teacher, I obviously need to be, I play an important part as a bridge between what's going on in school on a day-to-day basis and their vision for what the school should be. I think we're very closely aligned, and hence why I suppose I was appointed, that this should be a place where students, as our motto says, aim higher every day, and we find ways to help them to do that. I think also a part of the if you like, the founding articles of our charity, which is what a school like St. George's is that we're both furthering education of our young people, but we're also living our part in the town and contributing to our local community. And I think if we're holding true to both of those two things, that's ultimately where we're headed. As to kind of like the fine details about what changes over the next years, I think I'm very open to moving things forwards, but I think we'll always hold at our heart the idea of that, as I say, of aiming higher and making sure that we are lifting our eyes up all the time to what our students need for the future, but also that greater mission that we have, which Dr. Watts, our second head teacher, talked about raising young men and women who will move the world close to God's kingdom as well. And that's an important part of our daily mission.
Andy, it's really fascinating to hear about your involvement with all of the values of the school and how the school is presenting itself, I suppose, for modern children, for, you know, preparing them for life ahead. From a personal point of view, when you've finished at the end of the day, what's your favourite thing to just detune? How do you like to relax?
Well, I've got a youngish family, boys of about 8 and 12. So there's lots of time taking them to do various things, like most modern parents. We've got a busy schedule of different things, but I suppose trying to carve out quality time with them as young boys who are going through this phase once is important. Grabbing the chance to all eat around the same table occasionally during the course of the week, I suppose, is part of that. And then if I'm being more intentionally individual about it, I've got a number of different hobbies: running, reading, rugby refereeing, those will begin with R, but also I'm obviously a very committed member of my local church and choir as well. Trying to carve out those times to do those things is also important to me as well.
So you take the 3 hours out of the classroom as well, by the sounds of it, in a different way.
Absolutely, yes. It's slightly different to the original 3 hours, but yeah, absolutely. They're all things that I suppose give me an opportunity to think differently and to do different things.
And what's your favourite time of the day, if you could just capture it in one?
During the school day?
Yes.
I would say break and lunch times. I love wandering around. That when I'm meant to be doing something strategic or I've got a deadline coming up, one of my dangers is I just go for a walk and don't actually get that thing done, because I do love to be around people. That's why I came into teaching in the first place. So I think wandering around, talking to people, catching up with students, talking to colleagues. And one of the things I do love about St. George's is that you can make a circuit of the school within about 10 minutes and you can capture quite a few different people on your way around and just get a sense of how everything's going. Any time of the day where I'm allowed out of my office is definitely my favourite time of the day.
I think you've given us such a brilliant insight and a flavour of the values of St. George's and the opportunities that exist. And I'm really delighted that you have talked to me today about this, Andy, and just given us that lovely window into the school to learn some more about it. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. That's Andy Ford from St. George's School. And Andy, if people do want to learn more, how should they learn more about the school?
Yeah, so the simplest way is to go onto our website. So that's stgeorges.hearts.sch.uk. Just search for it on any search engine. You can find it. And there you will find lots of information, both about the day school and the boarding school as well. You'll find information there about our Christian heritage and our background, but all the wonderful things that we do. And you can read about our recent inspection results as well. So they're all there on the website to be found.
That's a little bit of a teaser there, Andy, to check out all the information on the website. Thank you so much. It's been a real joy. I would love to continue the conversation a bit longer, but we will finish on that for the moment. And hopefully we can talk again another time, Andy.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
So we're going to take a little break on the Parents Show on Mix 92.6. We'll be back with more chat in just a few minutes. So stay tuned.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Thanks for joining us again on The Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and today I'm really delighted to be joined by Marcus O'Shaughnessy, who is art curator and founder of Imaginative Reaction. Marcus, thank you so much for joining us on The Parents Show today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you in the studio. Now, Imaginative Reaction, you're going to have to tell us all about that. How did it start? Tell us about your role within it.
Okay, so Imaginative Reaction started long before I actually gave it a name. It was rooted in a story of a man called Nick Fraser. He was a brilliant and expressive artist who was also a close friend to me and my family. And he was a person that my father supported and believed in very deeply. My dad helped give Nick the encouragement and space he needed to create, and he championed his artwork when others didn't always understand it, and he gave him the confidence to express the thoughts and feelings that he often kept hidden. So I witnessed how much that kind of support can change a life. Where when Nick passed away in 2023, I felt deep responsibility to honour his legacy, not just by sharing his work, but by continuing the cycle, creating a space for other artists who want to feel like they don't quite fit the mould. So yeah, Imaginative Reaction was born from that, and it's a living, evolving platform that uplifts creativity in all forms, and it can give artists, musicians, poets and makers the space to not only share their work, but also their stories.
Sounds amazing. It sounds really beautiful and vibrant and dynamic. And you look like it's something you really love to do, Marcus.
Yeah, it is. And it's kind of just evolved from the heart, really, and through my family and my children. Yeah, I've taken a year out to kind of bring it all to life of any kind of working role. And this is kind of my new role now. I did an art curator course in February last year at UAL. And this has kind of just been the journey so far.
Fantastic. And for those of us who aren't very arty, can you explain what an art curator is for us?
So yeah, an art curator, because I didn't have a clue either. It's someone who brings an artist's work to life. So it's about providing them, either bringing multiple artists and doing open call exhibitions or focusing on one and finding them a platform to be seen. And whether that's through pop-ups, whether that's through major exhibitions or online, it's various ways. And it's just a kind of someone who can help bring that art to life.
Because I suppose every artist has different media that suit them. Some suit all, some suit just one,
yes.
I'd imagine.
And so you look at different narratives that you can hold for exhibitions, whether it is just focused on paint medium or if it's sculptures. There's so many different ways. So for example, Nick Fraser's first exhibition I created last year in November, because he's got quite an expansive collection that is all different styles. We've got some but is kind of based on masculinity, some spirituality, some that's actually history and shows landmarks in London, such as Brunel Bridges and Millennium Dome. And yeah, so that one, that particular one, I called it Chapter One because it was about opening, the show to Nick Fraser's work that's never been seen for 40 years and been hidden away.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. And I'm picking it up that art is really important to you. Can you tell us why it's important? What role does it play in your life?
Yeah, of course. So for me, it's always art's always been more than something just to look at. It's a way of making sense of the world, especially the parts that don't really come easily in words. But after losing Nick, I saw firsthand how powerful creativity can be in expressing grief, emotion and memory. So art became a way of keeping his presence alive and a voice that continues to speak in his absence. I also spent 10 years working in the youth service, providing alternative education for young people through music production, radio, art and nature-based projects. So I've seen firsthand how transformative it can be for young people when they find something they can connect with. It becomes a creative outlet where they feel they're heard, they're understood and inspired. So for some of these forms of expression, the only place is that they feel safe to show who they really are. And so I feel that art gives them the freedom, it gives them purpose, it gives them a way to process the world around and within them. And that's why it's not important, it's essential.
Yeah, and I can see now how all the roads led to where you are now. It makes complete sense. And I'd love to know, because obviously this is the parents' show and we always love to hear great, valuable information for parents. So why is art important for young people and how do you think it's important for them?
So I think art is vital because it gives young people a voice before they all have the words. It teaches them their ideas, their feelings, their imaginations. They have value and I believe it's a universal language. In a world that's often very noisy and fast-paced, I think art can offer a quiet a place for young minds that can reflect and express and grow. It's also a brilliant confidence builder. And when a child sees their work displayed and celebrated, I think it sends out a powerful message that what you create matters.
And I think what I'd love to hear, from your experience is there an arty type? Is there a child that's arty? And do you have to be a conventional painter, to be an arty child.
Yeah, no, I think every child has the ability to create. And it's the idea that it's about being free and expressing being free. It doesn't have to be perfect. And that's why art is a beautiful way to express yourself, because it doesn't have to be so to the point. They can just express themselves through whatever medium and share a story, share their view, share their idea, without having to formulate the words to tell and explain.
Brilliant. And so you're making it essentially about creativity, and then the end product, I guess, is then art, which is lovely. And I'm sure arty people know that creativity is the key. But it makes more sense when I think of young people who might not be conventional painters, but who are extremely creative.
Yeah.
And so you must untap or tap into, unleash some fantastic kind of talent within young people as you go along with your work. What's that like?
Yeah, it's incredible. It's I think previously in the youth work role that I had, it was more music based and production based. So it was often about allowing young people to express themselves, whether they were singing, spoken word, or poetry, and we'd record them in the studios, and we'd provide different sound backings for their tracks, and then we'd teach them music production and logic. And that was every Monday night from 5 till 9. So those 4 hours every Monday, those young people were just in a complete creative state. They just got to be completely free, do what they felt that they felt was the right way of learning for them in that time. And yeah, every Monday they'd just be leaving buzzing, absolutely over the moon, happy. And they'd all have this MP3 stored on their phone. They'd all be asking me to send them by the end of the night event whatever they'd made, so that they could spend the rest of the week just have it on repeat, playing it to all their friends all week. So it's a, yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, it sounds fantastic. And have you seen patterns? Do you see that there are certain approaches that work in kind of combining young people and art or creativity?
Yeah, so I think it starts with making, first of all, accessible and removing, like I said, that pressure of perfection, and giving young people a space to play, explore, create, and without any judgment, I think is key. So that might be through school, through the community spaces, or even through the exhibitions that we're running. And I feel also representation is important. When children sees their art, when a child sees art that looks like them, I feel that it reflects their communities, it speaks to their emotions, and they're more likely to engage with it. And that's why with imaginative reaction, I think it's about diverse voices and not just the polished professional ones.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, because obviously if media reflects people, if they can see themselves, it's a great validation, isn't it? It's
yeah.
a great endorsement of who you are, and it works.
Yeah.
It makes amazing difference, doesn't it?
It does.
It seems like such a simple thing. And I think if you haven't experienced it firsthand, it's hard to imagine how significant an impact that can have on you. But it matters.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. It really does.
Now, what inspired you to, I can see a little bit about where your path, your professional path and your artistic background have come together. And how did it all come together in imaginative reaction? I'd love to know.
So this is a personal moment. So this was last year I did the first exhibition for Nick Fraser, which we mentioned, Chapter One. And my daughter, who's 6, she was coming to attend. And she's super keen on art. She loves creating things. And you can just leave her with pens and pencils and a canvas and paper, and she'll be away for ages. So what I did was I took one of her painted canvases with me to the exhibition. I had 44 of Nick Fraser's paintings up on the walls at the Crypt Gallery. And as I knew she was arriving, I secretly popped her one up on the wall.
Nice.
So she got to walk into an exhibition where all the public were walking around. And then she just kind of spotted her one on the wall and was like, oh my goodness, Dad, my art's up in the exhibition.
Awesome.
And yeah, just watching her reaction, watching how it made her feel, watching how it just got to share that information with everybody, and then running around telling everyone, come and see my art. I thought, well, why can't I allow other children to experience that? And why don't young people of that age get a chance to feel what it would be like to be in an exhibit or a gallery environment? And it all dawned from there.
Fantastic. It is a lovely idea. And I mean, it'll be, I'm sure, a special moment for your daughter.
Yeah.
So what does imaginative reaction look like?
So it looks like it's an online platform so far until now. We've got the exhibition running. We have done a live event for an artist, a musician, very talented. Her name's Bo Tai. So we did a showcase for her live album where we went to St. Mary's Church in Tring. We had a grand piano in the middle, and it was about providing an event for her to be able to showcase her work, record it live, and then just get it out there and online. So she's got a second one coming up, which is going to be in July, which we can share info later. And yeah, it's going to be one where we can stream and look at videos and incorporate. So the whole idea is about any type of artist, whether you are a musician, a painter, or a creator, it's providing them an online platform without having to pay anything, just to have a page to show all the stuff that they make, whether it's audio, whether it's photography, whatever it may be. We can have your own bespoke page, and then from that it allows all these artists to come together and they can communicate, network, collaborate. And yeah, and the aim of the game is to just, yeah, keep raising this community of people and allowing them to evolve together, and making sure that those that do sit in their rooms and in their cabins or their little hideaways creating their studios, they don't just stay in there alone and hide away and never show anybody. They know that there is somewhere where they can showcase their work and share it without the idea of, oh, how much is that going to cost, or what do the other people like, or is it good enough? And we're open to all, and you're welcome to join, and we're going to shout about what you do.
What I love about the idea is that it sounds like it's completely separate from school, and quite often you find any of those kind of artistic talents are very exam driven or school driven, and this gives young people an opportunity to be who they are in a completely different setting, you know.
Yes. And that's one of the ideas I think we'd like to expand on later down the line. After this event, we're looking at how potentially we could either offer alternative education, whether that's in holiday programs or in school, so that there's alternative ed that can be delivered, whether that is through sound healing and sound, just different art and arts and crafts workshops and various things like that. So yeah, I think we will keep evolving, and I will then take what I learned from the youth service and bring it back into this mold and see how we can evolve with that.
Brilliant. And what age group are we talking about, and what geographical spread?
So at the moment, for the Young Creatives Art Exhibition, it's based at Burston, which is just down the road in St Albans, lovely centre. And they helped showcase a pop-up for me last year with Nix, which is why I'm going back, because it was just really well done. The lovely community of people came together to see it. So this exhibition's from 4 to 16. And I think the next one that I do there will be actually be for adults. And then the next one after that will combine children and adults. And I think it will just be a continuous rollout where people will always have an opportunity to exhibit there. And I feel as it grows and it gets bigger and the audience gets bigger, there's nothing stopping us. This could end up into a stage at a festival, or it could turn into a whole festival. I have a background in running a community event, which was a while back, called Deeb's Day. And that was about, we used to get up to 30, 40 bands, 60 DJs, four different stages. And it was all about just community coming together, a bit more of a well-being side festival with just good music and good people. And I feel that this could be another platform which could just be for up-and-coming talents and youth and artists as a space to grow. Yeah.
And the other thing, I bet parents who are listening in are going to go, this is great. It has nothing to do with mobile phones. Yes. Certainly that environment.
Yes.
But what a lovely environment to create. Sure, they might need their mobile phones to create content and that, but actually this is about real life.
It is. And that's exactly that. And funny enough, in the youth work job I did, when I was heavily involved with the Duke of Edinburgh Award, and that was one of the things, no phones, you're not allowed to. And the difference of having a weekend working with young people when they're not engaged in anything or social media, you just see this other person come out of them. You see this young character just appear that is actually who they are when they're not distracted by something every 5 seconds. So yeah, we'll do more of that.
Fantastic. Oh, I mean, Marcus, it sounds like such a lovely initiative, and I hope it grows and you're already planning to expand it. What's the dream scenario, say, in, like, I don't know, 5 years' time? What would you love to see?
Okay, the dream scenario in 5 years' time is to...
I've totally put you on the spot.
No, that's fine. I've got quite a few dreams and I'm chasing them all at once. I'm trying to figure out chronologically which one's supposed to evolve and kick off first. So I think right now the dream was always about, originally started of sharing Nick Fraser's legacy with the world. So now that it's out there, now that it's evolving, and it's now brought me to a space to create imaginative reaction to support more artists, I think that both hand in hand. We're going to have a bigger exhibition. We're going to get into big galleries. Nick will become popular across the whole world. And once he is, Imaginative Reaction will be following that. And then I will be putting all the artists that have never been seen in a major gallery in a major gallery, and they'll all be together under one roof. Yeah,
that sounds really wonderful. And I love the idea of kind of summer camps and to kind of keep it.
Holiday programs. Definitely holiday programs and alternative education offered to schools. And we've got a long list of schools in St Albans. If there is anyone out there that thinks that, yeah, that school could really do as that type of alternative education implemented, then please reach out, because this is start of something that I think could be a wonderful venture forward.
Absolutely. And if you've got parents listening in who are thinking, oh, my child isn't the top artist in class, in the art class, or there's no kind of music facility in their schools, what would you say to them to do about it or to bring them into Imaginative Reaction?
Yeah, I'd just say just reach out. The website's open to all. You can drop us an email, connect with us on there. We've got an Instagram page at Imaginative Reaction. And you can contact me directly on mine, which is Marks James Art, MARX James Art. And just reach out. Just tell us what it is and tell us about your child and what they're into. And when we can help you, and we can just kind of point you in the right direction, signpost you to things that are happening, or youth support, or whatever events, exhibitions that are coming up. However, if they're not into art, then maybe just bring them to the exhibition in August the 3rd, and we'll encourage them to see how they feel once they've seen an exhibition and know that they could be part of it.
Because often modelling it and seeing it is what kids need to, as a goal to work towards, to inspire them.
Yeah.
But they certainly do sound like inspirational events.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Great. So just in case they didn't catch it, Marcus, just say the website one more time.
So, the website is www.imaginative-reaction.org, or the Instagram is Imaginative Reaction. The exhibition is on the 3rd of August at Burston's, the Young Creatives Art Exhibition, and it invites all young children age 4 to 16 to submit their work. We'll have three age categories. All of the work will be displayed. It'll be shared online, where I'll create a digital gallery so you can share it with your friends and your families from home if they can't make the event. And we'll also have a rolling showreel so we ensure everything's seen. And it's just a lovely celebration. I've reached out to a number of businesses in the local area, so we have got a couple of little prizes that we can give away, which we're looking forward to give out. And I'm just looking forward to welcome everybody that gets involved.
Brilliant. So parents, get that date in your diary, August. If you're not on holiday, then it sounds like a perfect summer activity. Marcus, thanks so much for joining us on the Parents Show.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
That was Marcus O'Shaughnessy, who is art curator and founder of Imaginative Reaction.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.